right, everyone. Welcome back to the Rowdy Alternative Podcast. Today, we're with Brendan from Western Grunge Tape Deck. How you doing, brother?
I'm living a dream, man.
Hell yeah.
That's the intro.
Yeah, that's a perfect intro. So we're gonna learn a lot about what he does here for a minute. But before that, I got to ask, you went to Ragweed, right?
I did.
Dude, give me the rundown.
I don't think anything like that has been done. We shot an episode last night about it with everybody that was able to go. And, I mean, not only Boone Pickens being able to sell out 4 days in a row, something that Garth Brooks famously said couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But Tumbleweed, The Rooster, Eskimo Joe's, and several other venues and stages set up with over 50 plus sets for 4 days. I mean, I've been to several festivals in my life. I've never witnessed anything like that at that capacity. Insane. But one of the best 4 days of my life. I mean, obviously, you know, getting to shake a lot of hands and see a lot of people that we do business with and be able to put faces and names, but the entire company being able to be together at one time, which has never happened. So
yeah,
I'm excited to see it happen again next year.
Yeah, I mean, they'd be silly not to host that another year. I just heard like the how much they made from it and how much is going to the school. And I think if what I saw is correct, like just the city of Stillwater in general too, it's pretty incredible. Because I remember when they announced the thing, I saw it in like a lot of people until it was confirmed to me. It was just like, there's no way that's happening, right? Like that's a leaked poster, right?
Yeah, but, yeah.
And apparently, by all accounts, it turned out great. So, and
oh yeah.
And like all the, cause like they had all the side stages from what I hear, and it sounds like it all ran very well too, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, one of the most logistically insane, there must've been 1.7 billion moving parts and it was seamless. I mean, the sound system was great. Seating was great. Everybody, I mean, they fit 53,000 people in that stadium 4 nights in a row, and it was seamless getting in, getting out. I mean, traffic wasn't terrible. I mean, it's something to be expected, but I mean, even parking, before going, we expected parking to be an absolute zoo. Mm-hmm. And no, it was fine. Yeah. I think they had maybe a couple malfunctions. I think Cody's guitar strap had fallen off, and I mean, it was like a NASCAR pit crew.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody's it was pretty sick. They did amazing things.
That's incredible, man. So I guess let's just start at the beginning, dude. So just so people get to know you and what you guys are all about, what got you into the Red Dirt Texas scene? Because I'm from Kentucky, and I happened to move to Stillwater one day, and then I went to a show because I was bored that weekend. It was at the time, Reed Southall Band with Austin Mead, and it was off to the races from there. So with you, how did it all get started?
Man, I wasn't really that big in a Red Dirt per se. I mean, and to be honest, you know, of course I've listened to Jason Bolin and Stoney LaRue and Turnpike and Southall and all those guys for a long time, but it wasn't until probably recently that I've been able to dive deep into like the history of it, you know, being able to sit down with Josh Kretschmer. That dude is a wealth of knowledge.
He's a wizard, man.
He's a wizard. He's a wizard. One of the most important, influential people in the music scene. Not even just Red Dirt, but music in general.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, most of our company is based out of Oklahoma, like Tracer from Oklahoma. Brooke, she's a student in Oklahoma State. She's our CMO. Gage is down in Gainesville, Texas, so he's right on the border. Tucker, one of our other hosts, he's stationed in Oklahoma City in the Navy. You know, and it's me out in Wyoming, and then our CFO, who's up in Billings, Trey. I think it started with kind of like this beer league. We'd review an album once a week, and we'd review like our favorite ones. Our first one was Life Lessons by Wyatt Flores. And then our second one was Diamonds and Gasoline by Turnpike Troubadours. And then we kind of just branched out a little bit between Texas and Oklahoma. But as we got bigger, we started to realize what we had for ourselves. And we've since kind of really expanded from Red Dirt. I mean, between Appalachian, Western Cowboy, I mean, Western grunge, if it's not really connected to like guys like Lacero or or Treaty Oak Revival, you know, we're trying to really touch all 50 states as much as possible. We just happen to be based out of Oklahoma, where some of the best music in America is being made.
Yeah. Yeah. And just speaking from my experience with Raise Rowdy, and this isn't me saying anything that they haven't said, because it's they're based in Nashville. We're based in Nashville. I'm from Kentucky, like I said, and I cover mostly stuff from Oklahoma and Texas. So it makes no real sense what I'm doing here. But like, it is really cool to see people like not in the heartbeat of it all, in the like red dirt country in Texas and everything, seeing them discover these acts going all the way back like to Ragweed and like up to now, like with Wyatt Flores and everything. It's really cool to see them, like their eyes open up and they're like, oh, it's not just Nashville. Like there's other stuff around here. And along with that, now it is getting wider recognition. You're seeing the Wyatt Floreses and everyone like that playing everywhere, playing headlining spots everywhere. And it's cool to grow with that, which I'm going to say like what you guys, just from me witnessing you guys on the socials and stuff, like especially like Twitter. I feel like Twitter is like a big spot for you guys. It's crazy seeing your guys' growth, man. I mean, I've been following it for a while, and that's why I'm glad to talk to you today. So how has that growth been? Like how's the your grind set, I guess you could say, to keep it going and try and reach out and do some more things?
It's, I mean, it's a full-time job at this point. You know, the amount of workload that is put in, you know, I easily probably put in 40 plus hours. If it's, you know, not even with podcasting, which as you know, but between booking the guest, planning out your episode, recording, producing, mixing, editing, all that is 10 hours, you know, depending on the project that you got going on. But then there's 30 other hours of working on promotional stuff for shows that we got coming up, working with artists and, trying to make managerial and agent deals, working in the studio ourselves, because we've signed on our own artists and we're working with a couple others in the studio. I think it's kind of like every couple months. It's like climbing 10-foot stairs at a time. Every so often, like you'll get comfortable. You're like, all right, it's starting to even out. And then you get to that next step and you're like, oh, not time to make another jump.
Yeah.
I think the big jumps were when we brought on Tina, our first CMO, and we started to catch a lot of traction on Twitter. And then we opened it up to make Western Grunge tape decks on Twitter page. Because at first, it was like I said, it was just a beer league where Tracer and I were tweeting about music. And then one day we're like, let's start a podcast and talk about it and get this music out there. Because like you said, you know, there's so many people outside of the Oklahoma area that don't hear that stuff, or outside of Alabama and Kentucky that don't hear that stuff.
Yeah.
And to be able to have a reach like that was important to us. And we caught so much traction that we decided to bring on a couple more hosts. So then the workload got even bigger on how to manage those kind of schedules. I think the big break happened with the Whiskey Riff incident. We had really started to take ourselves seriously. I mean, I think it was July of last year, Tracer, Trey, and I sat down and thought about putting pen to paper on, do we want to just run a podcast? The answer is no. We love the podcast, but it's not what we want to be. We want to make records. America needs more music venues. There's another issue we need to solve. A lot of artists need better managers and agencies, better record labels. There's another problem we got to fix. A lot of independent venues have troubles, you know, filling those gaps and pulling in artists and being able to promote themselves. There's another problem to fix. So we came up with a 1-3-5 year plan. Eventually it came down to us wanting to get our own domain so we could build a website. And that's when we found out that the Whiskey Riff thing had happened. After that whole scenario went down, it really blew us up, because I think what that really showed was our true colors.
Yeah.
Getting punched in the face by one of the biggest music companies in America, if not the world. I mean, the Ryman is worth
$6 billion. Yeah.
I think it really had a testament of us having two choices of getting punched in the mouth and laying down and being like, all right, or being like, no, we're gonna stick up for the little guy. We're gonna stick to our morals and our principles, and we're gonna keep trucking on. And I think that really spoke so many volumes to people, and really stepped us up. And then from then on, it's been every month or so, there's something else that comes down the pipe that just elevates us even further.
Yeah, and the whiskey route thing, because if I'm understanding things correctly, just from people I know in Nashville and everything who have dealt with them before for a while, I understand that they're now owned by the Opry. Is that how it is, or I could have that wrong?
Ryman Opry. They're owned by a billion dollar company.
Yeah, and that isn't like the dudes who were owning it before. So I'm kind of, if you'd like to hit on it and kind of give a brief explanation what happened there, because I remember when that went down and I was like blown away. Like, I didn't know this kind of shit like would happen so obviously. I'm sure it happens all the time, but so obviously that everyone could see. If you want to kind of give a backstory on that, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. You know, how we feel about the music business, how we feel about the authenticity of music in general. I mean, is there good stuff that comes from the big three record labels? Absolutely. I mean, there's Steven Wilson Jr., Ian Munsick. Everybody likes to make fun of me for it, but I like Hardy, you know.
I do too, man.
It seems like he writes the music that he wants to put out there, and I can't fault him for that if he's paid millions for it.
I'm a big rock guy too, so it's like, you know, an easy point to hit for
it's
me.
Easy. Is it good? I don't know. Subjectively, I like it, so we're going to let it roll.
Right.
And he writes his own music, so I can't beat on him for not pulling in eight dudes into the studio or women. Right. And, you know, Whiskey Riff has a tendency to write a lot of things outside of music related. They've, like you mentioned before, when they first started up, they were a lot closer to what Country Court does, work with a lot of independent guys. They talk about big stuff going on, but after they got bought out, it became gaining an ROI. They have to gain a return on investment, which means getting clicks, gaining interest from people. I mean, I'm pretty sure their Instagram is like 2 million followers. Their Twitter's at 250,000 followers. Like, they've got some serious big boy reach.
Yeah.
But a lot of their articles that they were putting on, like, one week they'd put out something about propping up an artist, you know, love them, you know, congratulations on getting a gold record or a platinum record. And then 2 weeks later, there's another piece about the same artist, like tearing them down, you know, not harassing them, but, you know, calling something on their character. And I kind of had enough of it. You know, ever so often I throw little jabs, but then I started making memes. Like, I think the one that really set them off was the Doc Holliday. Like, I see a cowboy, I see a man wearing a red sash, I shoot the man wearing it. And so I did, like, I see somebody wearing a Whiskey Riff merch, I buy the company selling it. And literally a couple days later, Trey and I are sitting down trying to figure out domains for our website. And we're like, I don't know, WGT.com. No, that domain's already been taken. That's fine. Western Grunge, I know that's not really us. And he types in, we're doing a text message thread, and he types WesternGrungeTapeDeck.com, and it automatically routes us to Whiskey Riff's merch site.
Wow.
And I go, no shot. And immediately go to Twitter and go, Whiskey Riff has stole Western Grunge Tape Deck's domains. Are you scared of us or something? And not knowing what I just tweeted, it really set the internet on fire, because everybody's like, wait, what happened? And it kind of just snowballed. Whiskey Riff goes on a giant ban spree. They ban or block spree. They block me. They block everybody. They had blocked Western Grunge Tape Deck's Twitter before I ever sent that tweet. They went on a block spree. I think maybe the final tally was probably close to 400 or 500 people. I mean, it was insane. I was getting DMs from everybody's mom and brother. I had artists texting me like, hang in there. Unfortunately, because of exclusivity, I can't step in. Yeah. I can't say anything, but keep fighting the good fight. Like, I'm going to work on getting my contract, you know, finished up here soon. I don't want to do business with them anymore, which is really cool. Like, I mean, people that I had listened to for years, who I'd never plan on ever maybe speaking to that recently or that soon, were jumping in my DMs requesting a talk. Shout out to Dalton Domino.
Yeah.
After Saving Country Music got a hold of me and wanted to write an article, you know, asking questions of like, are you guys a Bush League? Like, what do you guys do? What, why is this important? And more or less telling them like, no, we're a legit company. We have an LLC, we have a business plan, and we plan on becoming like tip of the spear in independent music. And he's like, cool. And puts out that article. Dalton Domino gets a hold of me, ends up buying the domains for Western Grunge Records. And he's like, you're no longer just a podcast, you're a record label, go forth and prosper. And that really set us off. I was getting in contact with lawyers. Rolling Stone wanted to write an article about us, see if it would catch any traction. Shout out to Aaron from Whiskey Riff. That's their legal attorney. Somebody, Brad Luttrell on Twitter, had made a comment and said, is this legally advisable? And Aaron said, I don't know. They know where to find us. And if they really want them back, they know where to find me. Mm-hmm. And that was the statement that their legal man gave. So
yeah,
after that, I mean, it was just rubber to road, took off, and it was interesting. At first, looking back, it probably would have been a funny joke, like, aha, you bought my domains, real funny. Now give them back. You know, yeah. I understand, but the whole block spree and, you know, their general counsel giving statements like that, it was like, I don't want to play nice with you. Either you give them back or we go total war. And one day I commented or wrote to Aaron and said, one day this company is going to be in such a place that you give us an offer and I can't wait to refuse it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's tell you what, man, that's crazy. I got no other word for it. But I mean, looking back on it, like you were talking about earlier, like if that gave you guys like a huge boost of support from major artists or artists, like you said, that like they couldn't even come out because of being exclusive to, you know, whatever thing they're a part of. And like, that's pretty incredible. But, and the way that you could build off that too, like it's not like that happened, then you're stagnant again. I think that says a lot about a brand or like a company. And I guess going off that, what have you guys done? And you mentioned it, I was just hitting on it and stuff. I know you guys like the label that Dalton helped you with. can you kind of explain like what that's all about now? Because I know like the Western Grunge Records and stuff, I'm just kind of trying to get a better understanding as well. So if you could kind of explain that too.
Yeah. You know, we've been moving pretty quickly. A big thing I tell everybody all the time at the company is the answer is always yes. Figuring out later is the hard part afterwards. It's always yes, no matter what it is. And I think the big thing was getting the record label. We're like, cool, we have this. We don't have any experience with signing artists. We don't have any experience with stepping in a studio and recording music. We have no experience with doing anything in the professional music sense, you know. I think the really big step that we took was, one, getting in contact with guys like Dugan Irby, local buddy of ours. He's playing our show in Denver, May 7th, opening for Blaine Bailey. And then, you know, actually signing our artist, Annie Babs, being able to, you know, gain a lot of rapport with some of these peeps out of Dallas-Fort Worth, Rich Henderson with Alabama Sound Company, being able to, like, ask questions and learn, like, how easy this is. Is it easy? Absolutely not. But is it simple? Most of the time, yeah, it's, you know, gaining enough revenue to step into a studio, rent the space. Maybe you already have a band. Maybe there's some studio artists in there that can play. Recording those tracks. There you go. Moving on from there, Rich Henderson had put out a tweet that he wanted to come out to the West. And it just so happened to be part of our business plan for the year that within our first year, we wanted to promote. You know, I think a big inspiration that we got was Western AF doing it. Western AF partnering with artists. I mean, obviously they do a lot of studio sessions, but partnering with venues and putting on a tour. We're like, yeah, that's something that we could be good at. We have really good relationships with a lot of artists. We have good relationships with, you know, as much as we road dog driving to, you know, everywhere that we go, venues, shaking hands with everybody that we meet, showing face to the owners and, you know, almost being residents at some of these places. It really came down to Rich Henderson one night tweeting, I really want to come out to the West. Does anybody know where we could play? And we had just wrapped up, man, what episode was that? It was back in November, and it was like midnight, and I instantly text Trey and go, hey, I'm going to give a shout out to Rich. I'm going to tell him that we got a venue and we're going to bring him out. We didn't have a venue. We didn't have, can I cuss on here?
Yeah, you're good.
We didn't have shit. We didn't have shit. But what we did have was saying yes now and figuring out later. And so I text Rich on Twitter. Didn't even have his phone number yet. Didn't really have a huge relationship other than, you know, passerby on Twitter. I was like, hey man, I got a venue out in Billings. I'd love to have you out. What dates are you looking for? And he's like, maybe around February or March. I'm like, cool. So at midnight, Trey and I devised this business proposal and how to execute it. We needed to build enough rapport with Pub Station Billings to have them trust us that we've never talent bought before. We've never promoted a show before. Can we talent buy, build a bill for you, bring it to town, and be the lead promoters on it? And so it started with getting Sean, owner of Pub Station. He's also the president of Rocky Mountain Independent Music Venues. You know, getting rapport, bring him on the show, talk about his business and the inner workings of that. Then, you know, hey, we have this business proposal we want to give to you. And I remember I was sitting on the side of the road talking with Trey. You know, we were on the phone for maybe 30 minutes prior to the business meeting, like going through, okay, he says this, what's the next move? Okay, he says this, where do we want to go with this? How do we walk away with a win? And so we call Sean in this big group call. You're like, hey, Sean, you know, I you came on the show, but, you know, I also wanted to interject what else this company wants to build. And I think we'd be a great asset to you. And he goes, yeah, what do you got? And I was like, well, we really want a talent buy for you. I've got a couple cats that I want to bring out to Billings that have never been out there before. And I think that it'd be a really good show. And this is the direction that we want to go. And he goes, you're good, man. I'll give you four shows next year. What time frame are you looking at? I'm like, could you do February or March? And he goes, yeah, let me seal down a date for you. Start routing your guys. We'll get a big email chain going, and then we'll hit it up. And from then on, I was like, well, that was a lot easier than I thought. Getting a hold of Rich and being like, hey man, I got you settled for a date. We're working on your opener right now. Ended up getting Daniel Simpson out there. They played a song swap, which, you know, out in Oklahoma, Texas, east of Colorado, like that's a big thing. It happens all the time. But yeah, out of Montana, nobody does song swaps. And if they do, it's not at Rich Henderson, Dano Simpson level in, you know, a 400 to 1,000 cap room. Yeah. That was huge. And everything that we've been able to accomplish has kind of just built more and more confidence. After you, I mean, I've always kind of been like this. If I, you know, whether it's going to a new job or learning a new skill, it's seeing something done once and being able to be like, all right, I've seen it done once, I can do it. And right then after, we got in contact with Starbar out in Denver to bring Blaine Bailey and Dugan Irby out to play a show. And that's kind of just the direction we've gone of, you know, talent buying, marketing, record label. I have quite a few people ask me, like, what do you guys do? What is it that you're into? And it's like, if it exists in the music realm, they're either we're learning how to master it or we're about to step right into it. But yep, if it's in music and it exists, then we want our hands on it.
Yeah. And that's your work ethic, man, is very impressive. Like that's just being able to hop into anything and everything and tackle it no matter, like, you know, you might not know shit about it, but like you said, you're going to do it anyway. You're going to watch it the first time and you're going to tackle it the second time. And that is kind of, I see a lot of similarities with you guys and kind of what Ray's Rowdy's doing in Nashville about, like, we're big on the live events right now and getting to as many festivals as we can. Like in a couple of weeks, we're going to be out at Calf Fry and all that. Like, and I don't know how much I could say on here for people, you know, so I'm going to keep that stuff off, but it's not my tales to tell out of school, but it is kind of cool to see this work ethic. Has it always been like that? I'd imagine when you first started this all up, you had to have had some kind of like, man, I don't know. Like I have a little bit of apprehension towards this next step, but now it seems like you just like, all right, what else can I get? What else you got for me? Like, right, how did you like work on that ethic you have?
I think I've always kind of been like that. I was in the Air Force for 6 years. Mm. I went to as many leadership schools as I possibly could. I signed up for every deployment I could possibly go on. Same thing with wrestling. I've been a wrestler for almost 20 years now. Wanted to go to every wrestling camp, shake every coach's hand, wanted to become really good at it. I've kind of always had that piece of me of, you know, finding, not a hobby, but a passion and learning the skills to become really, really good at it. And I think it came down to a lot of things of one, taking a passion and wanting to be really good at it. The next piece being, I've always hated working a 9-to-5, and I 100% believe working a 9-to-5 until you're 65 years old and, you know, never, you know, not wasting your life, but living, you know, working until you're 65 so that you can live your life afterwards just seemed like a waste of my own time. Yeah. And it kind of just came down to, you know, starting the podcast, learning how to do it. And I think for the first 2 or 3 months, it never really like came to us. I think episode 6, we did Norther Shane Smith. And I remember very distinctly, you know, because the plan was to do it once a week. Once a week, we'll release an episode. We'll do this until we get tired of it. And then
yeah,
hopefully maybe one day we'll be bigger than Hippies and Cowboys was. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember having that conversation with Tracer after we finished that episode. I was like, man, it's going to be so cool to look back at this album in like 2030 and be like, that was one of the best albums of the decade. And he kind of gave this look that I recognized of like, don't think I'm going to be here that long.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because recording once a week, like there's nothing to gain from it. I mean, obviously putting the music out there, I think we had an idea if we wanted to keep the namesake of Western Grunge Tape Deck and maybe eventually pass it on to somebody else to carry the torch.
Yeah. Like it was a passion thing, right? Like exactly. That's what it was. Yeah.
Exactly. But because, I mean, haven't listened to Hippies and Cowboys since 2021. So I didn't really have a frame of reference. Tracer hates listening to podcasts. Funny enough, he started a podcast. So like we weren't really like tag teaming on picking stuff, you know, cherry picking from other companies or other promoters or what have you. We kind of just did our own thing. But I think that that's what people appreciated was that we were very authentic on doing it our own way. We weren't taking influence from anybody. There weren't people knocking on our door like, hey, you should try doing this instead.
Yeah.
And because it caught so much traction, we kind of like had that serious conversation of, you want to do this for the rest of your life, or do you want to continue digging ditches and working on refrigerators?
Yeah.
Well, that's an easy answer. I used to call Gage on the phone. Like every day we would talk on the phone while we're both digging ditches and we're working our jobs. And I'd be like, how's your day, man? He's like, this really sucks. I'm like, cool. Let that be motivation. You know, like let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Hell yeah. And like, it's, I'm sure you've ran into it too. Like people like around you, like in your normal life, it's like, they ask you, like, I get a lot of like, so why do you do this? Like they don't understand it. And it's just like, and it's literally like, without blowing smoke, like it legitimately is like, I love helping artists. Like, that's why I started this. Like they're great people. It'd be a difference if they were all dickheads, but I've not met, you know what I'm, you know, you have a few, but like mostly all of them, they're great people. It's like, why wouldn't you want to help them in any way you can, whether it's writing an article or, you know, shooting an episode with them. Cause I remember the first time I had like my moment of like, oh wow. Okay. This isn't just me talking to a screen. Like it was like one of my buddies, I don't know if you know Austin Upchurch, but
I do.
Like he texted me, I think it was only, I wrote like an article about him and he texted me one day, said, yeah, dude, Warner called me because of your article. And that to me was like, oh fuck. Like I'm just, at the time I was living with two other dudes just writing on an iPad, like articles, like six beers in, you know what I mean? So like that's what keeps me going. And I assume it's the same thing. Like it's not about the clout. It's not about, I get tickets to this show, so I'm going to keep covering these guys. Like it legitimately is about helping these guys and girls. And that's really the bottom line to it. And I assume that's the same way you feel.
Yeah. You know, I've been a dreamer my whole life. I kind of walked into this situation as, you know, looking back at how like I coach wrestling is very similar of, I didn't have a lot of really good influences in my athletic career and my collegiate career. it didn't go the way that I needed to. And I always look back at, you know, it's a two-way street.
Yep.
Effort that I could have gave, but maybe if I had different influences and different people in my life to steer me in the right direction, maybe it would have gone a lot differently. I do that in, when I coach wrestling, of always, you know, not making kids better than who I was, but giving them an outlet and giving them opportunity that maybe I wasn't afforded. And, you know, turning around, and that's extremely applicable to the music business of, you know, I'm not a musician, but I know what it's like to dream. And yeah. I know how hard it is to attain those things. Maybe I can point some of these artists or these venues or these labels or these agents or talent buyers in the right direction to help them become successful. And, you know, whether we get paid for it or not, I think looking back and saying that we did the damn thing and we gave it everything we got, and people really, I mean, the show in Billings was like, I remember crying on Sunday going home, because I was like, what an amazing experience that you bring out an artist that's never played a show in Billings to people who most of them had never heard of Rich Henderson, and people walking out of the show like shaking hands, like, thank you so much. That was such an amazing show. We didn't make shit on that. We didn't make any money off the promotion. We didn't make any money off the talent buying. Most of the stuff that we've done has been for free for a long time on, you know, one, we don't really care about the money and we really want to help the others, but two, we're not very good at it right now. So if we fuck it up, we don't want to charge you money for it.
Yeah, right.
Obviously it's changed a little bit, but I mean, everybody that we do business with, you know, we charge a significantly less rate than other people. Mm-hmm. And it's for the basis of what's fair. And also, being a traveling musician is extremely expensive. Like, if you break even, it was a good year. I don't need to be charging an artist $1,000 to promote their album for a month. That's asinine. We're not at that point. I don't think we'll ever be at that point. Not that we won't be able to make that decision, but right, I don't want us to ever be in a position that we're like, we're so good that we get to charge you what we feel like.
Right.
Like getting in there and helping every single person we can possibly, even other podcasters and other people in the scene that aren't, you know, in the facet that we are, but they like writing about music or, mm-hmm. you know, they like going to shows, and we're always, you know, texting people, throwing them in the right direction. Like, hey, I don't know the answer, but I got a contact. Let me connect you guys. That's the biggest payoff for us.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. That's awesome. So I guess it's about to be May now. So about halfway through the year, almost, give or take. So do you have any goals for this year or anything that you're working for that like off the top of your head that you really want to make happen by the time 2025 is over?
Man, we got our show in Denver, which would make it show number two. I think our original goal was to get one show this year that will be done at 200% capacity by May. I'd like to get three more shows by the end of the year. I'd like to get two more singles out for Annie Babs. Some of the other stuff, I mean, we're going down to Laurel Cove.
Nice.
We got contacted to help out with that. Funny enough, having that conversation with Rich Henderson, he's like, you're not helping out with shit because it's already been promoted. It's like the work is done, man. Go mm-hmm. have a good time. So,
yeah.
I mean, we're heading up to Under the Big Sky. Really good buddy of ours. Really amazing artist. He who shall not be named, because I won't oust him like that. His manager reached out to us and was like, I'll get you guys press passes. I want you guys to come out with us and hang out and promote the show. A lot of the stuff that we want to accomplish just hasn't happened yet. And I think it comes down to, I think the big goal is, you know, putting out the music, securing, I mean, this point in the podcast, we're booked out 60 days in advance, which is something that we couldn't do last year. Not even by the end of the year, we couldn't do it. We couldn't accomplish that. So the podcast is in a good spot. I think we've definitely got a couple guests on the kill list that we really are fiending for. I mean, we're in contact with a couple of them already. So getting those hammered down would be huge. I think the biggest goal for us is, would probably be, you know, amplify the podcast a little bit bigger, Not that it's our namesake or something that we really put a lot of our focus on anymore. But it's definitely a foundation to, this is kind of a, I don't know how, if you feel the same way, but when we first started, it was like any guest and every guest. Absolutely. Yeah. Like learning the skills to be able to talk to somebody.
Even today, that's hard for me to shake, man. Yeah.
Then it kind of got to a point where we realized what we had, but then you look at the analytics and we're like, man, if we help a brother out right now, is it going to be really helping him out, or is it going to be an episode that we talked?
Yeah.
You know, we need to build the podcast at such a point that we can make the decision of having the exclusivity of like picking and choosing who we want and being able to take the dude that only has less than 1,000 listeners on Spotify and being like, you have a gift. And 40,000 people, if they heard your story, you'd blow up. Like, let's make that decision.
Right.
Getting the podcast up, more shows, more music. Man, I can't really think of any other goals this year other than just to continue doing what we're doing, but just keep doing it better.
Yeah.
Keep shaking hands, keep kissing babies, and make the damn thing work.
That's what you got to do, man. Like, this was a learning experience for me, man, because I've seen you guys everywhere on the socials. I've listened to your podcasts, everything, but I didn't know what it is that you guys did. But knowing that it's like this whole spectrum, man, like that's exciting. Like, it's exciting. I'm excited for you. It seems like there's nowhere up from here, man, or nowhere but up from here.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. So that's exciting. So before we go, go ahead and like put out all your plugs where people could find you, the podcast, everything. I know that's probably a long list, but the floor is yours.
Yeah, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter/X, MySpace, LinkedIn. Just kidding. Those last two are fake.
I was about to say.
TikTok and YouTube. We're all under Western Grunge Records as of now. I will say that will probably be changing here in the future just because of what we plan on doing with the company and the direction that we plan on going in. Spotify, Apple, Amazon under Western Grunge Tape Deck. You can find all of our episodes there. Two episodes a week. Tomorrow is Thursday, so I don't know when this comes out, but Ian Munsick, by the time it drops, should drop tomorrow.
Nice.
Thursday. And then we got Boys from Oklahoma recap coming out on Monday, and a lot of other guests that I haven't mentioned yet that are coming on. So, big shout out to, you know, City of Stillwater, Oklahoma State University. Shout out to Trenton Fletcher, Rich Henderson, Jared Morris, Treaty Oak Revival, Shelby Stone, Dalton Domino.
How great is Trenton Fletcher, man?
He's awesome. He's awesome.
He's the boy, bro.
He's a dog. He's a dog. And everybody else that's out there just road dogging it, trying to make a living.
Amen, dude. Amen. You weren't able to secure a calf fry, were you? Like, you tried to, didn't end up working?
I tried. I think I reached out to them way too late. They were looking for brand ambassadors, and we just couldn't secure it, but.
Okay. We'll meet some other time then. I look forward to it one of these days. So, everyone, Brandon from Western Grunge, and you can find us at RageRowdy.com. We're on all the socials, Rowdy Alternative, Instagram, X, you'll find us there. Google us, we'll show up. So everyone, thanks for listening. Make sure to go find Brandon on all of his endeavors, and make sure to follow him, and we'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips.